This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Lectures, radio shows, and more available at sevillepodcast.com. If you like what you hear here, please tell a friend, sevillepodcast.com. On Saturday, April 19th, Senator Creed Deeds addressed a small crowd at the Charlottesville Albemarle Democratic Breakfast and reviewed the recent General Assembly, the one-day veto session scheduled for April 23rd, as well as a possible special session on transportation. Deeds is in his 17th year in the legislature and has announced he will seek the Democratic nomination in next year's race to succeed Tim Kaine as Virginia's governor. Deeds began his talk by saying that the legislative process can be frustrating.
I've been in the legislature now 17 years. When I got there, there was a Democratic governor, Democratic Senate, Democratic House. We shifted around a little bit, but I was there during a very dark period of time when we had a Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican House. So I've been to the top of the mountain, I've been to the bottom. And now we're reclimbing. You know, we've elected two straight Democratic governors. Tim Kaine is a very decent human being, probably the most decent human being I've known in that office. He's a wonderful man. He's doing a great job as governor. He's a great leader. But last fall, thanks to the help of a lot of people around this Commonwealth, we retook the state Senate. The big change from a policy standpoint, wasn't great, because in the Senate of Virginia, and this is when I went over there in 2002 after I was with your help, I won that special election in December 2001. Hunter Andrews told me that I had the worst case of house-itis of anybody he'd ever met. The House is a more partisan place and a place where politics is just more raw. In the Senate, he said, we're all on one team. We all pull the same direction. We work together. Now, that wasn't entirely the way I found it. Did I say Hunter Andrews told me that? John Chichester told me that. I apologize. Hunter, of course, was not in the Senate by that time, and Hunter, rest his soul, is not with us anymore. But, you know, for the most part, Democrats and Republicans working together in the Senate have kind of been a more moderate influence in the legislative process. And so from a substantive standpoint, Democrats taking over the Senate was not a big change. In fact, I would argue that probably to ensure that you have a centrist course in the state Senate, Democrats had to take over, because people like John Chichester and Russ Potts and Charles Hawkins weren't running for re-election. And they were going to be replaced by people who were more in line with the extreme end of the Republican Party. So Democrats had to take control in order to maintain a centrist course. We took control. And while substantively, from a policy standpoint, there weren't great changes in this from the Senate, what was remarkable, if you think about it, is this. Now think in history. Virginia Democrats we have much to be proud of. We have much to be proud of. We've done a magnificent job managing the fiscal policy of the state. We've made great strides, but the Virginia Democratic Party was the party that controlled state government when children were blocked from entering schools because of their circumstances of their birth. The Virginia Democratic Party is the party that was in charge of state government when the state parks were closed, for crying out loud, rather than integrate. I mean, not everything in our own heritage is something we can be proud of. This year, though, in the Senate of Virginia, the big change is that where last year you had 11 middle-aged white guys chairing the committees, and I happen to know some middle-aged white guys I'm pretty fond of. This year, you had 7 women, 4 African-Americans among the committee chairs. That was a monumental change in the face of the Senate. I mean, I think it took the legislative process significantly forward to where it looked more like Virginia. And it brought a new, a more humane touch, I think, to the management of business. Now, the legislative process this year was difficult. I talked about makeup from a Democrat and Republican standpoint, being in my 17 years, I've been on the top of the ridge and I've been at the foot of the hill. I've also been in the legislative process years when we had the years of fatted calves, when we had these huge surpluses. And I've been there during the very dark years of when we were finishing the Gilmore administration and then recession, and we had a governor who would not recognize the reality of the recession and the reality of his own fiscal policies, the impact they had on our state responsibilities. I was there during the Wilder years when we were in recession and going through a very difficult period of time. And I was there during the period, I guess also during the Gilmore years, when the economy was booming and we had plenty of money to spend. I was there during the Warner years when we worked together, Democrat and Republican, to try to resolve the budget situation. Well, this year we entered the legislative process with about a $641 million shortfall. That shortfall, after the January and February revenues had come in, that shortfall had grown to $2 billion over 2 years. So that set up a very challenging responsibility for the General Assembly. Our biggest task every year is to try to, is to balance the budget. So, and we had a $77 billion two-year spending plan that had to be addressed this year. So that was responsibility number one. Responsibility number two, in the big picture, was to deal with the shortcomings of our mental health system. You know, that were exposed to the for the world to see last April 16th, when a young man who had fallen through the cracks in our system exploded, and 32 innocent people lost their lives down in Blacksburg. What really came out of that process is a great deal of learning that we all had to do about shortcomings in our system, and the sure knowledge that there are thousands of people like that shooter walking amongst us today. Well, we set about this year trying to reform some of our mental health laws to make sure that the standard for involuntary commitment was changed to fit reality today, to make sure we could communicate between a college and a family and a community service board within the context of the federal law, but those agencies could communicate. And we made changes. We came up with some funding for mental health. But that was, it was all, the funding issues were tough for us this year, all the way around. We balanced the budget. I was just talking with Steve. We balanced the budget, you know, without raising taxes, so that meant something had to be cut. There were cuts across the board. But if you look at the General Assembly session in light of those two big priorities, we accomplished a lot. We balanced the budget. We addressed mental health. And we did mental health. I mean, that was one area where Democrats and Republicans together worked together and came up with a lot of the same. We were all on the same page for the most part. And when you think about it, government's not always about Democrats and Republicans. It's about working together for the good of Virginia. And that was one area where we could join together and get some things accomplished. If that's what the session's all about, we did what we needed to do. But that wasn't what the session was all about. We went into the session also with knowing that we were on economic hard times, that we were going to have a tough budgetary year, and that we needed to continue to make investments, even in tough times. And so the governor last fall proposed a significant bond package for higher education. Well, the House, there's some people who, just because the governor says yes, they have to say no. And politics, you know, is a funny business. You guys know that. The House of Delegates came up with a proposal that was different from the governor's approach on the bond deal. The Senate looked at it, made adjustments. Some mental health projects were added. Some state park projects were added. At the end of the 60 days, and we went over about five extra days this past year, at the end of the 65 days, there still wasn't agreement on the bond package. And that was one of the most significant things we were doing, frankly, because we have to continue to invest even in hard times. You have to, you know, we can't just stop the progress just because we've got some budgetary difficulties. We still have lots of debt capacity. We've got the ability to retire debt. And, you know, from the standpoint of economic growth, economic activity, the best way to jumpstart the economy in many respects is to get those bonded projects underway, put people back to work, put contractors to work. So last week, a deal was reached on a $1.4 billion bond package for education, for mental health, and for parks. Now, I don't know what the project list looks like yet. It hadn't been released yet. I've not seen it. I guess I will see it about Tuesday. But that $1.4 billion figure is going to be, it's significantly less than that adopted by the Senate, about $800 million less than that adopted by the Senate. So there are lots of projects that were in bills that aren't going to be in this project. But I will tell you, it's still a historic bond package for Virginia. We've never had one that size. And just to put it in context, if you all remember, in 2002, we passed a bond package, a general obligation bond package, of about $1 billion. At that same time, North Carolina was adopting a $3 billion bond package. $3 billion. So 1.4 is historic for Virginia, but we're still leaving some things undone. We'll just have to wait and see the middle of the week what it looks like. The second thing that was left undone was the appointment of judges. I will tell you that as a legislator, one of the most disappointing things for me over the years has been to see the politics involved in the election of judges. You know, I'm a lawyer. There's nothing more sacred, in my view, than making sure that the face of justice in the communities of Virginia is one of fairness. You've got people who know the law, who are willing to continue to learn the law, who are willing to be civil to the litigators, the lawyers, and the public in front of them, that the face of justice in every community is one that's going to beat back the almost natural cynicism that people have about anything government. I want justice is a very important concept. So the election of judges, I think, is one of the most important things we do. But it's also one of the most partisan things we do. Except for redistricting, I can tell you that the election of judges is the most partisan thing. So this year we were in a little bit uncharted water because you had Republicans in control of one house and Democrats in control of the other. In some areas, that worked out all right, and agreements were reached. In other areas, it didn't work out. Democrats and Republicans just couldn't talk to one another. And I will tell you, in some of the circuits that I cross, Republicans just wouldn't talk about it. They're used to their way or the highway, and they're gonna they wanted to appoint their judges. And you know, I'm perfectly willing if the circuit court judges aren't elected by the General Assembly, it goes to the governor. So from my perspective, what do I have to lose, right? If the governor makes the appointments, they're interim appointments, they'll expire next year. But I think the governor will listen to advice from his friends in that area and make good choices. So we got hung up in about 26 judges were not appointed and frankly are still in limbo. And it's a major failure on the part of the legislature, and from my perspective, not be able to reach that compromise. I'm hopeful, but not altogether confident, that we can appoint most of those judges this week. The third big area of failure is a long-standing problem, and that's transportation. We talked a little bit about that right now. You know, transportation is not just about building roads. It's not just about building roads. It's about the whole, how everything fits together. And in my view, you got to figure out how your road system can be integrated with your rail system, can be integrated with your land use process, how it all fits together. I mean, I think you need, in the big picture, to come up with better ways to incentivize telecommuting, to incentivize carpooling, to figure out how to get your road, your cars off the road, how to increase your capacity by decreasing your load. But there's something else you need to think about, and this is transportation as well. You know, we need to develop a long-term strategy for putting high-speed internet in every community of Virginia. If you can have the best-trained workforce in the world in Virginia, and you can have high-speed broadband internet everywhere, you can do the smartest jobs anywhere, and you can take capacity. You can take load off the highway that way. I mean, and if you think about it, you can actually create economic growth in areas without putting shell buildings there, without having to invest the capital of putting shell buildings. You can do the jobs from Tyson's Corner whether you're in Buchanan County or Tazewell County or Bland County or wherever. I mean, there are lots of things you can do in the big picture. But where are we right now? I mean, the short-term aspect is this. Last year, a deal was put together. The Attorney General brought together the Republican leadership of the House and some of the Republican leaders of the Senate. They crafted this package. They rammed it through the legislature last year. Now, I voted against it every step of the way until the end. And Tim Kaine made the best deal that he could with the Republicans. He was convinced it was the best he could do. I told him I didn't think it was very good, but I understand that you know, Tim needs to be a successful governor. And he did the best. I trust him. I like him. I share a lot of his goals. And I supported him in the end when he made the deal. Well, the deal included this abuser fee thing that everybody, I mean, it was clear as a bell. It was a bad idea. And the legislature ran from that as sure. I mean, I'm not sure why the press, why the media took so long to pick up on that. They didn't start talking about it until it had been passed in the law, the end of like May or June of last year. Somebody from the newspaper, the press corps, they sit on the back row of the House of Delegates. They sit up in front of the Senate. Why weren't they paying attention? Why didn't they start writing about it beforehand? That's an idea that had been before the legislature in 2005, 2006, and 2007. In fact, in 2005, when it came to the Senate, passed to the House of Delegates, you know, I said, this is going to do nothing. Take money from poor people. You're trying to bleed turnips. Most of the people I know in court who have suspended licenses who are going to be subject to the abusive driver fee have suspended licenses not because of bad driving behavior. They've had a speeding ticket, they can't pay their fine, and their license gets suspended. And it becomes you're rolling down the hill and you can't stop, or like quicksand. The more you struggle, the deeper you sink, and I knew that people weren't going to be able to pay the money. That's number one. But I voted against the plan in 2005. But it still was part of the package. And the legislature, of course, ran from it. Once the media started talking about it, the people got enraged, rightfully so, and they ran from it. The Supreme Court threw the rest of it out. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with a big problem, frankly. Now, I thought the plan itself, the plan that was thrown out by the Supreme Court, was bad for several reasons. The biggest reason, I mean, you can talk about the projects, you can talk about, I mean, the fact that non-residents didn't pay a cent under the plan. But the biggest problem, the one thing left over from the Byrd years, the state government that makes sense, is the creation of a statewide transportation system. Statewide transportation system means that it's the state's responsibility and that you have, whether you're in Cumberland County or Bland County or Fairfax County or Loudoun or Suffolk, you know, the state's going to take responsibility for building roads. You know, if you balkanize the system, if you allow localities to fix their own problems, if you allow the state to step away from it, what do you have? You know, what you had in the 1920s? Dirt roads in some counties, gravel roads in other, paved roads in other localities. You know, we're a commonwealth. We have to have things that bind us together. The statewide transportation system ensured commerce would move smoothly throughout Virginia. It ensured you'd have one quality of highway with little difference. Now, the worst thing about that plan was beginning of the balkanization of our transportation system. If you allow Hampton Roads and Northern Virginia to cut themselves off from us, to fix their own problems, so to speak, if you assume that they're the only ones that have responsibility for fixing their roads, then you assume that we're not a commonwealth, that we're not all in this together. That's number one. But number two, if we have a problem in the rest of the state, where is the urgency on the part of any of those legislators, the majority now? Where is the urgency on their part to help us fix our problems? We're a commonwealth. We're all in this together. You know, it was obscene to think that Hampton Roads, you know, the port of Virginia, the one of the greatest economic assets of this Commonwealth, in my view. The largest package exporter from the Port of Virginia is a factory that sits in Covington, Virginia. It sends thousands of trucks a year, down 64, up 81, back down 64, to the port. And we're all tied together. And that's why we have to have a common approach to transportation. So when that plan was thrown out and the abuser fees were repealed, where does that leave us? Well, with no plan for going forward, but two immediate problems. Number one, we have about a 450, and I'm not talking about building roads here. You've got to take care of the infrastructure you have. We have about a $450 million annual shortfall in our maintenance reserve fund. Nearly 40% of our bridges and tunnels statewide are structurally deficient. In light of what happened in Minneapolis last year, and I'm not prepared to allow Virginia to allow those bridges and tunnels to continue to deteriorate. You build things, you have to take care of them. You have to take care of them. We have a responsibility to figure out how to resolve that maintenance reserve problem. That in my view, is problem number one in transportation. That's the main thing left undone. And that's why we continue to talk about transportation. But the second problem is this, and this goes to your construction issue. Because maintenance reserve is eating up a larger and larger chunk of our transportation funding, we're spending more money now maintaining roads than building roads. By 2011, we will not be able to provide the state match for federal construction dollars. So we'll lose. We've never gotten our share of the, we've always paid more, Virginia has paid more into the federal construction or federal highway fund than we've gotten out. But by 2011, we will not even be able to get the matching funds that we get today because we're going to be spending what money we have on maintenance. So we're still in discussion about transportation, and there could be a special session called later this spring. I'm hopeful that one will be called and that we'll reach agreement. My understanding is that some of the Flat Earth Society they've signed no tax pledges, and they are under significant pressure from the business community and the districts where they're elected to come up with transportation funding. Now, the fear is that people will feel pressure and they'll make another bad deal like they made last year. But the hedge against that is that this year, unlike last year, you have a Democratic state senate. Last year you had a Republican state senate, and even though those guys, there used to be a bunch of moderates there, they felt the pressure to do anything they could to preserve their Republican majority. So that's why they cut the deal. We don't feel that pressure. We've already been to the bottom of the hill, and we know we can survive. So I've probably talked too long, but that's kind of a rundown of the major stuff. There were lots of other bills down there, but I'll tell you, with payday lending, I know is something that I got a lot of letters and emails about, and that's one where we took a quarter of a loaf or less because that's all we could get. My view was we needed to put something on the governor's desk, and then he could fix it. I guess he just didn't feel like he could make the necessary amendments to make that law more strong. We had on the floor of the Senate when that bill came out, we had 16 votes out of. It proven the Democrats. We really are not. We're not an organized political party. We're Democrats. And we really are a big tent. We have people with lots of disparate views, and that's okay. But we had 16 votes for a stronger payday lending bill, and 16 is not the majority of 40. So that's as far as we could get. My view was we needed to get a bill to the governor in light of his view in this area. I thought we could make some more amendments than he did. We just have to wait and see how it goes.
You've been listening to Senator Cree Deeds speaking at the Charlottesville Albemarle Democratic Breakfast on April 19th, 2008. This lecture was recorded by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. If you're interested in having us record your lecture, please contact us for rates. You can send an email to seantubbs@gmail.com.